So this is our last class on the Thich Nhat Hanh book, No Death, No Fear. And tonight we're focusing on the last couple sections in chapter 8, looking deeply at no birth and no death. And I am not my body, and no separation. And then chapter 9, accompanying the dying. So I wanted to start off with us basically having someone read the meditation that starts, in my edition, it's page 163. It's in the I Am Not My Body section. And he says, you can use the following words to guide you in your initial practice of the third touching of the earth. And I really loved this meditation, which is about one page long. So I'm wondering whether there's anyone who would be willing to read that for us meditatively and let us just experience that guided meditation. I'm happy to do it, but then you'd have to listen to my voice all night.
I'd be willing to.
All right.
Do you want the part? Okay, so on mine, is it page 168 where he says, you can use the following words to guide you to your initial practice of the third touching the earth. I let go of the idea that I am this body, and then it starts. I see this body made up of the four elements.
Yep.
That's where you want to start?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. I might have to go where I can find some better light. Just a second. And then tell me when you want me to start.
Yeah, and then just read it kind of nice and slowly and let us absorb each sentence or so. So go ahead.
I see that this body, made up of the four elements, is not really me, and I am not limited by this body. I am part of a stream of life of spiritual and blood ancestors that for thousands of years has been flowing into the present, and for thousands of years flows on into the future. I am one with my ancestors. I am one with all people and all beings, whether they are peaceful and fearless or suffering and afraid. At this moment, I am present everywhere on this planet. I am also present in the past and in the future. The disintegration of this body does not touch me. Just as when the plum blossom falls, it does not mean the end of the plum tree. I see myself as a wave on the surface of the ocean. My nature is the ocean water. I see myself in all the other waves and all the other waves in me. The appearance and disappearance of the form of the wave does not affect the ocean. my Dharma body and wisdom life are not subject to birth and death. I see the presence of myself before my body manifested and after my body has disintegrated. Even in this moment, I see how I exist elsewhere than in this body. Seventy or 80 years is not my lifespan. My lifespan, like the lifespan of a leaf or of a Buddha, is limitless. I have gone beyond the idea that I am a body that is separated in space and time.
Thank you.
Sorry, I was a little too fast in the beginning.
That's great. So I'm going to take a few minutes like we have been doing at the beginning of these classes for the last several sessions and invite you to you can either reflect on the meditation we just did or share something from the sections that we studied this week that you thought were, impacted you, particularly thoughtful. You're welcome to say why as well if you want.
Well, I printed out this whole touching the earth part. Are we going into groups, little groups?
Later, a little bit later.
Oh, are we supposed to be quiet now?
No. I want people to unmute themselves and say what, if they, some part particularly touched you.
So I printed this out. Because I had the PDF and the whole of this, it just touched me very deeply. And so I started doing the practice of touching the earth with the prostrations in the very beginning. Mm-hmm. And it's just very profound. And it reminds me a bit of the Tibetan practices in the Nundo practice where you prostrate with the visualizations. It's just putting that in a deeper or a different context, but I'll just say it's very profound for me and I'm very grateful for this practice. That's probably all I'm gonna say now.
Ruth Ann, did you have something?
Oh, yes. Thank you for Yeshe for reading that right now. That was cool. I don't have the text right in front of me, but the line, my Dharma life does not begin and end with this life, I paraphrased it, but that just really kind of is strong concept and beautiful.
Yes, I appreciated your reading, Yeshe. And for some reason, this particular meditation was very, I'll use your word, very evocative for me. It was interesting to feel very connected to this concept of one's ancestors and the future stream of one's life, and then all connections and all people, all beings in all direction is kind of what I heard him then refer to. The other images of waves on the ocean is one I've come across before, and it's kind of an old favorite. So I just experienced him describing a lot of visualizable or visual images, and it was fun to connect to no death through those images.
Well, I don't know how many of you were here for the Dharma talk on Sunday, but it was on suchness. And then here we go. Here's a section on suchness. So I'm going to read a little bit. This is actually the section that is titled No Separation. And Thich Nhat Hanh says, the Buddha said that the nature of your reality is the nature of no birth and no death, no coming, no going, no being, no non-being, no same, no different. This teaching sounds as though it contradicts the teaching that everything that is born must die, the teaching that we cannot escape death, sickness, and old age. Practice looking deeply. You will realize that birth is a notion, death is a notion, coming is a notion, going is a notion, being is a notion, and non-being is also a notion. We have to remove all notions concerning reality. Then we will touch the ultimate reality, or suchness. Suchness is a technical term. It means that reality is as it is. You cannot say anything about it. You cannot describe it. You can say that God is the ultimate reality, and anything that can be said about God is wrong. Any notion, any idea concerning God cannot describe God. Nirvana is the same. Nirvana is the removal of all notions and concepts so that reality can reveal herself fully to you. Just curious, how is my audio feed? Okay? All right, good. When I go like this, like I see tracers, so I feel like my video is really slow, but okay, so what does this really mean? Realizing everything, birth and death, etc., are notions, and how this really happens. I mean, some of this we can we can process, you know, by reading the teachings and by being in a class like this. And so we can start to absorb these ideas, or at least like challenge the limited ideas that we have. That's one of the ways that I like to describe Buddhist teaching. It's not about accruing more ideas. It's about challenging the assumptions that you already have and don't even necessarily realize you have. So certainly through study and discussion and thinking about it, we can challenge our ideas. But really this comes from mindful observance of our own direct experience in meditation and or, you know, at any moment off the cushion, which is what we tend to, you know, describe as mindfulness. It's seeing, especially in Zazen, can we let go of all of our concepts? I don't know if you've ever had the experience of, you know, for a moment, your mind and body and heart opening up to the possibility of letting go of some of your mental map of the world. And then there's just a little bit of an opening, and there's almost like a shock, because a sense of, you know, who you are and what life is about and what this all means and who and what and where for a moment just seems kind of arbitrary. It just can kind of fade away for a moment. And we realize that, like, wait a second, all of these concepts that I use to navigate moment by moment and hold on to my sense of identity and meaning are like, they're not as solid as I thought. And this is what, as I was talking a little bit on Sunday, I used this image of the leaf where, you know, kind of inspired by Thich Nhat Hanh and all of his descriptions of continuation and manifestation and how, you know, a leaf is really an individual thing. It is, you know, an individual leaf, but obviously it's part of a larger organism. It has no meaning. A leaf without a bush or a plant or something that it's photosynthesizing for is pointless. So it's kind of, its meaning is dependent on something larger. Its structure reflects the reality of the sun and our atmosphere, and it's made up of elements that have been around since the Big Bang and have been tons of other things. It's composed of cells, each of which you could almost look at as being an individual living thing. There's so many things present in that leaf that it really, you know, its individualness is only one tiny aspect of its being. So when we can see ourselves that way, when we can let go of our little, as if we were a leaf, our fondness, our concern about our little leafness, our leaf life, our brief leaf life, then a lot of fear falls away. If we're identified with something much larger that isn't going to go away just because our circumstances change or our life disintegrates. Or in a more limited sense, you know, something major in our life changes, or somebody insults us, or, you know, all the other ways that our small self and sense of well-being gets challenged. There's also less protectiveness about that. So, in terms of, you know, I find it interesting that Thich Nhat Hanh is he's weaving in this exploration of interbeing and freedom from fear along with a lot of, you know, no death, no fear. So this book, it is talking explicitly about death, and soon we'll talk about it more explicitly. So I wanted to do a 10-minute breakout and ask you the question, do you think it's helpful to make a practice out of contemplating death? So I think many of you are probably aware that there is a, can't remember what page it is. It is in this book somewhere, the Buddhist verses that are in many Buddhist communities and monasteries and stuff are recited every day. Basically, I am of the nature to grow old. I cannot escape old age. I am of the nature to become sick. I cannot avoid becoming sick. I am of the nature to die. I cannot avoid death. And then there's something about, I will lose everything that is dear to me. And the only thing that is mine are like my deeds, how I respond. So that is a practice every day of contemplating our own death. So, do you think it's helpful to make a practice out of contemplating death? So I will just break you out for a few minutes. All right. Is that everybody? I was like, when we do these breakouts, like we lose like 8 people. Do the breakouts a little later.
They lost in cyberspace?
I
maybe they're in suchness.
We were 22 and now we are 14. That seems like a lot of people to have lost, but I don't know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, So let's see. To continue on. So I really liked this toward the end. Thich Nhat Hanh says, our consciousness is like a television with many channels. When we push the button on the remote control, the channel we choose appears. So we have a choice. We have a choice about what we do with our minds. So then he tells the story of Anatta Pindika, a late disciple of the Buddha, and how he was a disciple of the Buddha for like 35 years, and then he was dying. And one of the Buddha's disciples, Shariputra, had been Anatta Pindika's friend for a long time and is keeping him company while he is dying. And Anatta Pindika was in a lot of pain. So Shariputra starts reminding him of the great merits and joys of the three treasures. And then there's a kind of what they described, like the pain was mitigated, right? Because the joy, the seeds of joy had been watered, so the pain was mitigated. And then Shariputra leads Anatta Pindika through a number of meditations on, kind of like we did, I am not my body, I am not my 5 senses, I am not the 5 skandhas. So, and then Anatta Pindika is extremely like liberated and joyful. And actually kind of complains to Shariputra. He's like, wait a second, like, I never heard this before. I've been a lay student for 35 years, and I think it's Ananda says, oh, well, that's what we teach the monks. So Anatta Pindika says, you got to teach the lay people this stuff too. And then they promise that they will. So it's a little side story, but I thought it was cool. And then Thich Nhat Hanh tells some additional stories about examples that he knew of where someone, hi, Angie. Oh, Bodhi. It's Bodhi. Hi, Bodhi. he tells, examples where he knows someone is dying, and like one of the nuns from his community went and, you know, spoke positively, told good stories, and filled the person with joy. And in several instances, the person was unconscious, but then after somebody spoke to them, watered the seeds of joy for a while, like that, they woke up for a while, even though they had been deeply unconscious. And then another circumstance where the woman was in a lot of pain, even though she was unconscious, she was writhing in pain, and then they played some Buddhist chanting for her, and she calmed down. So I just thought it might be fun to throw it open a little bit and share some. If most people I know have an interesting story about being with someone as they are actively dying, or maybe even at the moment of death, where some remarkable things happen. So I don't know if anybody wanted to jump in and share about that.
I'd like to share.
Yeah.
So my grandfather passed July 2019, and within the last hour or so of his life, I got to talk to him on the phone, and it was revealed that there was a trip that my father took in his childhood, and my grandfather was so excited because he saw an alligator, and my dad lied to him and said, I never saw the alligator. And when I went on a cross-country road trip with him, he was so excited to show me a deer, and I just never saw the deer. And we all shared this great laugh in his last moments that we all shared. And I was like, sorry, Grandpa, like, I wanted to make you happy. So I said I saw the deer because you were so excited. And my dad revealed also I did not see the alligator when I was a kid. So we all got to really share this beautiful moment when he was literally in hospice and on his way out. So it was really beautiful.
Yeah. Sweet. And there's something about, this is why, the Tibetan Buddhists, some Tibetan Buddhists do a lot of preparation for death. So this kind of thing, but really done very, very systematically and elaborately in order to be able to let go. So this, the things that we've been talking about, this sense of ourselves as being, you know, just a manifestation that we are larger than we're not just our bodies, we're larger than that. And to really be able to, at that last moment, you know, where you're naturally, physically going to be feeling some urges for self-preservation, right? But to be able to let go, to have done this work deeply enough to be able to let go. So you see frequently in people's last moments last hours, last days, you know, the kind of the struggle to let go, and things that we can do to make that letting go more easy. I know that, and then sometimes the timing of people's passing is usually quite fascinating. So, like, my grandfather was dying of lung cancer, and he'd been sick for quite a while, and he'd been in hospice for about a week, and other family had been around him for all this time, putting in hours and hours and hours. And I ended up flying out, you know, from Portland to Minneapolis, and then some relatives drove me the 3.5 hours up to Hibbing, Minnesota, and I'd get to the hospital, and it's nighttime, and you know, there's somebody, a cousin there, holding his hand, saying, you know, crying and saying, you know, Grandpa, please, you know, you'll get better. And then everybody's tired, and they went home, so it was just me and my sister, and I just whispered in his ear, you know, hello, I'm here, because he wasn't responsive at that point. And I said, we're all here now, everything's good, you know, go ahead and be with God. And then about a half an hour later, he died. And, you know, that's a one-time thing, but I think most of you have probably heard similar stories, you know? It happens with great regularity. That
when I did hospice, I just remember this one lady. She was elderly, but she was very sweet and kind of was ready to die. You know, I mean, it was she wanted to die. She said, "I don't know what's going to happen tomorrow morning." You know, she kind of wanted it in some way, and she was looking for a way that she could do it almost. But there was a complete acceptance of it. She wasn't didn't seem to resist it at all, but couldn't figure a way to get to die. So, and she talked a little bit about with me, and there was another person in the room too. And I think we both agreed that probably what she was doing was not going to work, that she needed to maybe look at some other ways of, you know, letting it be and see where that led. But I always remember that she, you know, the complete acceptance she had of it, you know, there's no fear there at all.
One of the things that I've observed with many deaths, animals and people, is that this is really a time for them, more so than it is for us who's saying goodbye. And it started first with my father's dying, and he was literally doing something called plucking at the sheets, so just chanting, take me, take me, take me, take me, take me, take me, take me. He was just so ready to go. And one of his sisters wouldn't let him go. She didn't want him to die. And he would tell me, get her out of the room. She's holding me back. Get her out of the room. And when he finally did pass, I was the only one present. And sure enough, she called me for almost a year afterwards and would call early in the morning saying, you killed Benny, you killed Benny. Because even then, she still couldn't accept. He needed to go. He wanted to go. He was begging to go. And I also, when he did die, it was the instant I saw him, I just said, this body is not my father. He's somewhere else. And this body was just a vehicle for him. And I've had that with other people who've died. And I also had an experience where I was working or interviewing with a veterinarian, and we went to see a dog at someone's house. And the woman who was caring for the dog kept saying, what should I do? What should I do? What should I do? What should I do? And so she was talking to the vet about, you know, science stuff, how to give more fluids, what to do, this, that, and the other. And I looked at the dog and I said to myself, why didn't this dog die 2 weeks ago? Why is this dog still here? And then I realized what this woman needed to do, and I shared it with her, and I said, Annie needs to know you're going to be okay when she's gone. Oh, yeah, 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 yeah. She blah, 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 blah. And I just stopped her. And I looked her right in the face, and I said, don't tell me. Annie needs to know how much you love her and that you're going to be okay when she goes. And the woman finally stopped all her chitter-chatter, got a little tear, and for the first time went to that dog and shared how much she loved and had appreciated that dog in her life and that it was okay for her to go. And you know what happened? That dog just died immediately after she shared from her heart. So I've learned there are two, for me, two main things, and I've also read this in, as a corroboration from the Tibetan Book of the Dead, that there are two things to really consider is let the person who's dying or the animal, whatever, know how much you love them and how much you've cherished them and what they've given to you, and that you're okay with letting them go. Don't hold them back. Don't let go of those attachments. Anyway.
Another reason to do our work so that we can be generous in that situation.
I like that because we can be a lot more helpful, understanding, and really beneficial for people if we are not afraid ourselves. Maybe I could want having a sister there who would not let go of me, though.
It's nice to be loved.
Yeah, that's what I was thinking.
It's nice to be.
Don't go, Bob.
Yeah.
You know, I'm just, you know, I'm being facetious, but there is something very precious about someone's love for you and how much grief or pain it can cause them.
Yeah, I know. I mean, I'm going to be bawling my eyes out. For any one of you, for my friends, my family, it's just what happens. But I guess there's a difference between, you know, that just sincere grief and I mean, you see it. I mean, not that we should blame anyone or judge anyone, but just, you know, sometimes people's sadness is essentially what's going to happen to me. You know, yeah. Ruth Ann, did you want to say something?
Oh, yes, actually, in 08, on YouTube, Grief Walker, it's one word, is by Stephen Jenkinson, and he said he was doing penance for being a grief counselor for 30 years, because we need ritual. And in his book, Die Wise, he said, actually, letting a loved one or being at their deathbed is part of your contract with them, whatever the relationship is, whether it's you and one of your children or you and a spouse or a friend, but letting the unfolding happen without your tag on it, your attachment on it, but let it unfold. in the way the dying person, it's their dying, not yours. But it doesn't mean that, of course, sit with your sadness or your, but to be, if you're totally present, you can still feel everything and, but let the dying person have their, it's their time.
That's been my experience also, Ruth Ann, that I can still feel great sadness, and I can grieve and I can cry, but that doesn't mean I have to have the attachment for them to stay.
Yeah. Yeah. I've kind of felt the last half hour of my husband's life in the ER, I was his cheerleader for whatever his essence needed to do. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I was the one asking the doctors questions, but I didn't want them interrupting what that loved one of mine knew. You know, he was in charge, in a sense.
Mm-hmm. Sometimes the most healing thing for a being is to transition through death, not to stick around.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's interesting talking about people that live a long life and being there at the end when their life naturally ends. But that's not the reality of a lot of deaths. It's that someone walk up to you and says, so-and-so's dead, and they were just 19. Or coming to work and coming out, favorite party guy, 17, died in the car accident. Sometimes it's like just being smashed in the face with a 2x4. Mm-hmm. Totally different experience.
Well, that's why I recommended Grief Walker. There's a child in there going through years of hoops for a toddler almost. And you can see the this child's already somewhere else, but the parents keep saying, try something else. And it's really beautiful to watch, but you know, any life is a gift. I mean, even someone that lives for 4 minutes, that there was a family who celebrated that 4 minutes of life, even though they knew medically that information was given to them ahead of time. But that baby still had a place in that family.
Well, thank you, everyone, for the reflections. 9 o'clock. Time for us all to wind down for the evening, but thank you all for spending this time together.
Thank you.
Thank you, Damia.
Nice to see ya.
Thanks, everybody. Nice to see everyone.